Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The numbers spoke for themselves when the Baltimore Ravens won the Super Bowl, and their head coach at the time joins us to talk about the new documentary and more. Brian Billick, kind enough to join us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. It's the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM. Coach, always a pleasure having you on. How you doing?
I'm doing great today.
Did you get a chance to watch the 30 for 30 by chance?
I did. It was great fun. We filmed that back in the fall, and to bring the group of guys they did together and kind of relive that very special time, be able to share it with the fans. It was a great time. I thought they did an outstanding job.
Yeah, the analogy we make all the time is if it were a movie script, no one would buy it because you had so many unique characters on that team, and you saw so many different personalities come together on that team and peak at just the right time.
You did, and it was great. I think that people saw the different personalities, whether obviously with the special, the subsequent HBO special, Hard Knocks, that we were the first to do it, because it did have a lot of characters, and it was unexpected. I mean, we had gone eight year before. We had what we thought was a special group, but we had no idea it was going to parlay the way it did into a Super Bowl championship. It was the leadership of that character. There be a Shannon Sharp or Tony Siragusa, Rod Woods on the back end, certainly a Trent Dilfer, Ray Lewis leading the group. It was a very special group.
It's really interesting. If I asked you that year what you thought of that group, not the accomplishment, but of that group, and now you, because time has always got to be a factor in these types of things. I think time makes things more interesting, not less. How do you think your thoughts on that group would have changed over the last 20 years?
Well, when going in, we knew we were going to be an outstanding defense. Now, did I think we were going to break the all-time scoring defensive record? You know, no. Even as arrogant and egotistical as I'm supposed to be, I don't know that I bet on that. But we knew we were going to be special on defense. Offensively, we had some other questions. But the way that group came together and morphed itself into complementing that defensive perfectly. I think we were the number two rushing team in the league at the time. The turnover differential. It played great complementary offense and defense at a time. I don't know that you could repeat that because we were at a time where we were kind of in a little bit of a void of the great quarterback play. There were good quarterbacks, but we weren't deep at quarterback in the league. We were transitioning from the Aikmans and the Marinos and the Montanas and that group. We had not yet come into the new dynamic group, whether it be Peyton Manning or Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, our championship, I think Tampa's and New England's in that three-year period, clearly it was a balance of offense and defense that won the day.
Brian, what did you go into thinking personal relationships? When you're not a head coach, you're working on a staff, how much does the personal relationship change once you get to the head coach? I know you'd like to spend time with guys, but it's not really realistic, is it?
No, it does change, and getting used to that and understanding that change, regardless of what you try to do and want to do in terms of keeping a close relationship with the players, you step back now and you've got the entire organization, not just the players, but the organization as a whole, to maintain those relationships with. So it's important that your coaches maintain that conduit, and through them you stay close to the players and keep them motivated and recognizing the demands on each of these players and try to develop those relationships as best you can, all but from a detached head coaching situation.
Brian Billick with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. You mentioned doing the first Hard Knocks. What was your mindset going into that?
Well, it was interesting because I didn't have anybody to reference. I didn't have anybody call and say, hey, what do you think of this? How did you do? Because we were the very first one. And at first blush, as a coach, you're thinking, no, this is more intrusive than I want. But the more we spent with it, the more we talked about it, for that team in particular, because for me, it was a great motivation for the players simply because, first, we were a small market team. All but on the East Coast, shoved between Philadelphia and Washington. And so the branding of, and a very new team, so branding of the Baltimore Raven profile, plus for the players, it was a great motivator in the sense that, you know, from the minute you win the game, the Super Bowl, people go, can you do it again? And I thought it would be a great opportunity for the to challenge the players going, look, we know what it looks like to practice, to be a champion. Can you do it in training camp following a Super Bowl? And if we don't, we're going to let the whole world see. So it was, I think it was a very strong motivation for the team to kind of keep that energy up that you want to have as a coach through the entire season.
When Nick and I talk about a lot, I think the strength coach, at least in college, might be the most important guy on a staff because he's around everybody. How does it work in the NFL? What is that guy's job other than, you know, sort of outlining what guys have to do on a daily basis?
Well, it is. There's a number of touch points, again, as we alluded to earlier with the assistant coaches. How do I keep contact with my team? And you're right, the weight coach, because it's every day, and he sees everybody in different capacities. He sees them through a different lens. That's the biggest thing, is he sees them through a different lens than the coaches do, simply because as a coach, you kind of view them as, okay, this is a starter, this is my backup, this is a draft choice, this isn't, this is how I deal with them. But, you know, for kind of like the special teams coach, he sees it through a different lens, and so it's a very important and valuable asset to know exactly where your team's at.
You talked about your Ravens team and the league, in fact, going through that transition of quarterback. Something similar, I think, is happening here with the Falcons. What are your thoughts on what you see Arthur Smith trying to do here?
Well, like anybody, I mean, it's all about the quarterback position, isn't it? And I think the good news is that we're as deep in good quarterback play as we've ever been in this league. And that's a good thing. I mean, well, obviously the guys at the top, whether it's Mahomes, it's a Hurst, it's a Josh Allen. I mean, the list goes on. Burrow has been spectacular. But we've got some good quarterbacks that will, I think, will continue to develop and be a big part of it. And so in this league, it's you're one of two teams. You either have a quarterback or you're looking for a quarterback. And that transition has got to happen very quickly because you're not going to be able to compete at a championship level unless you do have that dynamic presence at quarterback. So obviously the challenge for Atlanta is where are they at the quarterback position? Do they need to go out and utilize this year's draft? Or are they, you know, comfortable with a Ritter and a Mariota as they go down the way? So that's the biggest challenge for them going into the league. Because like I said, if you're still questioning, well, do we have that guy, then you probably don't. You need to go get one.
Why is it so difficult to draft the right guy if you're working at a 50% shot at best, even in the first round?
Right.
Any idea why?
Well, yeah, I wrote a book on it called The Q Factor. It's amazing how even in today's analytics and all the information and resources we have, it's a 50-50 crapshoot. And it's because the position is so unique. It's harder to quantify than any other position. You know, other positions with height, weight, and stats done and height and the level they played at, you can get a pretty decent idea of what the potential is for a player at other positions. But at the quarterback positions, it's such a moving target. And if we were to sit and discuss the top 10 quarterbacks of all time between the three of us, we'd probably come up with 12, 13, 14 names. And then when you talk about, okay, what makes them great? What made them Hall of Fame quarterbacks? It's different for every quarterback. Whether it's on the pocket presence of a Joe Montana and that subtle athleticism, whether it's the sheer stroke of a Warren Moon, the physical abilities of a Troy Aikman, the mental ability, the approach, whether it be a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, it's a different combination of skills. So you don't know whether when you look at a young player, you can check all the boxes, but does he have them in the right ratio that fit him, that make him special?
Okay, so after 2 years, let's say, how much do you know in the room whether this is going to work or not?
Well, Bill Walsh was a firm believer. You know by the 25th or 26th start. Now, it may happen earlier, but if it's not there, so you're usually talking about the first year and a half, depending on how much a player plays in his first year. But if you don't see it by that 24th, 25th start, it's probably not there.
Obviously, you're seeing it from both quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, both getting it done very athletically, but subtly different ways, right?
Yeah, you know, Patrick Mahomes, you know, we overuse the word unique, but I don't know that we've seen a talent like Patrick Mahomes in this league ever. It's just so unique in the way he gets it done. Yes, a certain athleticism outside the pocket, but he can beat you from the pocket as well. Jalen Hurts, a little bit different. Now, again, just a physical presence in the running game. Not quite like Lamar Jackson. Someone made the equation to me that Lamar Jackson's a tailback playing fullback and Jalen Hurst is a fullback playing quarterback. But he also has the skills to beat you from the pocket. At the end of the day, they have to be able to do that. And both can do that in varying degrees and then beat you outside the pocket in just a little subtle variation the way they do it. So, yeah, two dynamic young quarterbacks.
We were talking about, you know, at what level can a guy be considered a bargain? Well, Mahomes is getting a lot of money. He's still a bargain. Jalen Hurts is a legitimate bargain. As you watch the quarterback numbers escalate, I think Carr is going to be an incredible example of this. Are we finally going to pull back? Were you conscious even back then of percentage of quarterback salary to the cap the way that I think you have to be now?
Well, you knew it was coming, and it's unavoidable. In that you're right, when you have one position, and I think the league is eventually going to have to do something, a carve out for the quarterback, because you're talking about a contract. What's the cap going to be next year? $200 million, $220 million.
Yeah.
And the franchise number for a quarterback is what? $45 million. So that right there, to have a little less, just under a quarter of your entire cap on a singular position, unless you can build the contract that obviously amortizes it out. But you're still going to pay for it at some point. And then they'd still have the resources to build a team around it. That's a very difficult thing to do. And that's something that every club, and you're right, when you have a young quarterback that's on that early contract, that's a real advantage going forward. But eventually you have to pay it, just like they had to pay Mahomes, just like they're going to have to pay Burrow. Now, the good thing is they are on young enough that you can give them one of those mega contracts and spread it out over a longer period of time and have a pretty good feel like you're not going to have a lot of dead money. But we're seeing where we're getting to the point where quarterback contracts will be pretty like the NBA. They're going to be pretty much 100% guaranteed, and that does a lot to your cap.
Hey, Brian, would you be up for, let's say, we talked about it, every 3 years I can get out from a bad contract. We used to call it the Allen Houston rule in the NBA. I don't take the hit. Every three, I can't do it every year.
I still have to pay him, but I don't take the salary cap hit.
Would the NFL be better served for all parties involved if they gave you a do-over? Because
I think that having to pay the Piper one way or the other keeps you from doing a lot of stupid things. And the as high as the cap is right now, when you compare it to the NBA contracts, and guys that have guaranteed contracts of $100 million, $200 million, $300 million, that's a tough place to be. And to be able to get out of it would be great, but I think that would do nothing but escalate the contracts to an either higher level. That might fall into the category of the law of unintended consequences.
So you look at the last time you were with the Ravens in 07 versus what you see offensively now. Is it still, when you watch a game through the eyes of a coach, boy, I would love to have this guy. I would love to have this opportunity. I would love to play in this style.
I'd love to have these rules.
Yeah, the rules too.
Yeah. Every time I talk to one of the older quarterbacks, they lament that, God, I'd still be playing. I'd be like Brady. I'd play when I'm 75 years old if I had the rules now the way they are and how much they have changed, which is a good thing because it does protect the players. But like I said, we're deep in good quarterback play, as deep in good quarterback play as I can remember at a given time, at any given time.
Brian,
and it's fun to watch these guys develop.
Did you see the list? I think Peter King might have had it just this week, maybe today's column, where these coaches in the NFL, they come from small schools. They played at small schools. They were in small school territory as opposed to being around the big ones. Do you think there's a thread that goes through that? Why are those numbers 14, 15, 16 coaches who didn't play at the bigger places?
I think that's a byproduct of we're in the mode of, you know, we want the young guru now. You know, if the guy's had lunch with Sean McVay, he's going to get a head coaching job. And it's these young guys that we want, which is fine, but they tend to be young guys that really didn't play. And so they jumped into the coaching profession very early and had to work their way up. So I think it's that what you're alluding to is more a byproduct of the cycle of where we are right now in terms of these young coaches that are in tune to the analytics, had to coach at a lot of different levels, maybe or coached at a very early age and were given opportunities to, you know, step forward. I think it's more a byproduct of that than the fact that they just went to the small school, although the fact that they had to wean themselves either as a player or as early as a coach on the school, small schools, and work their way up into the profession, you know, that's certainly a byproduct as well.
I think one of the theories is also at a smaller school, you might have more time to talk to coaches than these programs where it's just a big machine. And it seems to be a lot of these guys might have actually had relationships with their college coaches that some guys might not get at big schools.
Yeah, and the fact that you're going to, like I said, you're going to do your due diligence as a young coach. I mean, when you're a young coach, you're constantly doing clinics. You're going and visiting people. You're as opposed to if you're started at a higher level, let's say you're a former player, and then you jump right into it, you don't go through that maturation of the constant interacting with coaches and what's going on and going to the conventions and all that. As a young coach, when you're scrambling around trying to make a name for yourself and make a career, all of that does have value.
Hey, Brian, before we let you go, you didn't ask us to do it, but I thought I'd put it out there. You're involved with xtechpads.com, and there's a lot of parents of young football players that are concerned with safety. Talk about what this is doing, this company, to ensure some of the safety for the players.
Well, just that. It's the best pad in the market. You know, pads hadn't changed in 40 years until xtechpads came along, and now they're literally the best, you know, the most used pad in professional football and college football, major programs. Now in the high school, it's gratifying to see how parents are getting involved. Go to xtechpads.com and make sure that our young people are protected the best they can be in this very obviously physical and violent game. They're the best pad on the market, and we're now beginning to work down into the youth market. It's kind of exciting. We're on the verge of remolding and doing some things. My two grandsons play football, and I can guarantee you they're going to be an X-Tech pad.
Is it absorption of hits? Is it distribution? Is it?
It's a combination. Like everything, you know, we've advanced such in technology that we're able to identify whether it be the materials or the way the structure spreads the hit, the concussion point out over a larger area, space and area, whether it be the helmets, everything, you know, training methods that we have, the track players. And so X-Tech Pads does just that. It's the ultimate in dispersion of the hit so that no one area takes the hit the way the old pads.
And I didn't know this, but again, reading as early as this weekend, they're finally, it looks like, going to make helmets that have different padding for different positions. It's sort of a universal helmet. You just get your size, but now there's talk of the quarterbacks put a pad in the back where they get bounced on their heads. Put a pad a little bit more on the sides for the receivers. Put a little bit more on the front for the linemen. I didn't realize that this hadn't been done before.
Well, yeah, and we're on that, and we now have the technology to do it. For instance, XX pads. You know, the old days, big guys had big pads, little guys had little pads. Now the pads are basically form fitted for you based on position, height, weight, age, your experience, injury history. All of those things come into factor when we now wrap these protective materials around our players.
Coach, always a pleasure having you on again. xtechpads.com. If you're a parent, check it out. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
Sounds good.
Brian Billick, one-time head coach of the Ravens. Of course, the 30-for-30 making its debut over the weekend. The Bullies of Baltimore with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. You realize how big he is, Brian Billick? He's 6'5". I don't think people realize the size of a Brian Billick. He's massive.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him in person. I don't think I would have said 6'5".
Yeah. He's that big. Maybe you shrank or you were bigger back then.
Oh, yeah. I there's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my mind that I've been.
And maybe he shrank. We all shrink over time, right?
Yeah.
But at the peak of his powers, listed at 6'5", 230 pounds, Brian Billick.
Wait, he told a story. You know, he was on Match Game.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Match Game, Dating Game. He was
He was on Match Game PM after being cut by the 49ers. He appeared as a contestant on TV's Match Game PM.
Was he on the Dating Game too?
Well, I don't see that anywhere.
Oh, thought he might have been on a Dating Game too. Handsome fella.
He couldn't make it in the NFL because he confused the laces with his blank. Wow. Maybe it went something like that. Yeah. I don't know if I may try to reenact it.
Do you think he could have told us? Damn, call him back. You think he could have told us who the six stars, almost stars, were that episode?
I think that's one of those things you never forget, right?
Fanny Flagg.
Mm-hmm. Charles Nelson Ryan.
Joyce DeWitt.
Gene Rayburn was the host.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.